Sasha crowed, breaking into a triumphant little jig at the foul line, as the pin setter, glowing beneath the neon pizza sign at the end of the lane, lowered 10 fresh pins into place. They trembled briefly before settling, as if wary that Sasha's spinning ball might soon annihilate them again. They were safe, for now, though. It was Abe's turn, and his throw, unfortunately, carried far less menace. Abe chuckled as he rose and offered Sasha a fist bump.
So, this is your hidden dark side, huh? Gloating when you're wiping out your opponent?
Hey, I told you I might be a little obsessed with bowling. I'm good at it, and I can get, well, slightly competitive.
Oh, don't worry. That's fine by me. I'm terrible, so feel free to wipe the lane with me. I promise I won't sulk.
All right, one more lane wiping coming up.
It was late, and Bonnie Bowl was alive with chaos. Nearly all 22 lanes were in play, and the line at the chromatic ice cream and drinks counter stretched long. Children darted up and down the neon white staircases that divided the snack bar from the lanes, shrieking as they wove between the glowing star-studded walls. From the arcade gallery in the back came a symphony of clashing sounds, screams of triumph and frustration, the metallic chime of tokens, the reeling of ticket machines, all blending into a bedlam so complete that Abe could hardly imagine anyone focusing enough to bowl properly. Sasha, however, seemed immune to the commotion. The overhead scoring screen still pulsed with the triumphant word turkey as she strutted back to the ball return, gobbling and dancing without a trace of self-consciousness. Two teenage girls in the next lane shot her a pair of disdainful looks at her flamboyant celebration. Abe, on the other hand, was charmed. He found the whole spectacle endearing, especially the playful little hip wiggle woven into her victory dance. When Sasha finally settled, Abe stepped up to the line. His ball sailed forward in a reasonably straight path, toppling 8 pins.
Way to go!
Sasha called out from her seat at the scoring table.
Now get that spare!
He retrieved his ball, took his stance, and released. The shot wobbled, flirted dangerously with the gutter, and then swerved back with improbable grace.
Yes!
Yay! Nice spare!
She bounded over and, when Abe returned, rewarded him with a quick kiss. The kiss was sweeter than the spare itself. By the time Sasha finished thoroughly annihilating him on the scoreboard, she leaned back in her chair, grinning.
Want to bowl another line?
How about saving that for another night? There's something I'd like to talk to you about. Can we, go for a walk?
Uh-oh, you sound serious.
Sasha grinned and gave Abe a little nudge.
Do I need to be worried?
Abe hesitated, his mouth twisting as doubt flickered through him. Was this the right moment? He exhaled and gave a small shrug.
I think that's time that I told you how I got all the cuts.
Sasha's grin faded.
If you are ready.
This is episode 45, Herostratus Folly. Abe didn't want to unburden himself inside the pizzaplex. Too many ears, too much noise, and too many shadows. Instead, he suggested a walk to the nearby park. The night air was crisp but gentle, the sky clear, and Sasha had smiled, saying that a stroll beneath the stars sounded romantic. By the time they reached an isolated bench near a still pond, however, Sasha might have been reconsidering that romantic sentiment. Abe had spent the entire walk unraveling his story in meticulous detail, beginning with the underhanded way he'd secured the apartment and why desperation with his mother's finances had driven him to it in the first place. He described the strange discoveries he made about Landon and recounted the uneasy phone call with Mrs. Prout, confirming that Landon was truly gone. He confessed how every simple act in the apartment, opening a door, flicking on a light, turning the stove on, filled him with sickening dread, as though each gesture might spring some hidden trap designed to end his life. He left nothing unspoken and uttered no half-truth in the whole regale. Now the two of them sat in silence. Sasha hadn't said a word since he'd begun, but she had listened, truly listened, and she was still holding his hand. That had to mean something, didn't it? But as the chorus of crickets swelled, both literal and proverbial, Abe's nerves began to fray. At last, he cleared his throat.
You probably think I'm making it up, don't you?
Sasha tightened her grip on his hand and shifted so we could face him directly.
Not at all. I believe you completely.
That's a relief. I was afraid you'd think I was crazy. Any normal person would...
Oh, I'm not a normal girl?
Abe smiled back at her, his expression softening.
I think I love you.
That's a conversation for another time. Right now, we need to figure out what's really happening here. You're absolutely certain the Gen 1s are trying to kill you?
What?
That question jolted him. Abe pulled back, frowning. What kind of thing was that to ask? He gestured toward the half-healed cuts along his arms.
How else do you explain all of this?
I'm just saying, maybe they aren't trying to hurt you. Maybe they're malfunctioning or acting out. What's happened to you could be collateral damage, not intent.
Okay, I'm not following.
Just then, another couple strolled into view along the path. Sasha's eyes lingered on them until they passed into the darkness beyond. Then she edged closer, lowering her voice.
Listen, the kids I work with, they've been through so much trauma, it twists the way they see the world. It eats at them. They act out, lash out. That's normal for kids who've been abused or neglected. They carry so much pain inside that it has to escape somehow, and it usually comes out in the worst possible ways. Sometimes they smash things. Sometimes they steal. Sometimes they hurt the very people trying to help them. They're not bad kids. They've just had terrible luck and no one ever showed them how to deal with it. So they get in trouble. They play cruel pranks or rebel or fight back because for one brief moment, it gives them the power when they feel powerless. What I'm thinking is, maybe the Gen 1s are doing the same thing.
Abe sat with the thought, tracing through each memory of how the machines had injured him. Could Sasha actually be right?
The previous tenant.
Landon Prout?
Yeah, Landon. Who was he? Did he do something to the Gen 1s? Could he be the reason they're so broken? Because if so, that might explain everything.
Abe frowned. He had wondered more than once why the Gen 1s were in such brutal shape. Was Landon Prout the one who had damaged them? Even so, who was to say if he dealt the damage, the result wasn't through self-defense? He couldn't dismiss Sasha's theory, but he also couldn't outright believe it either. Still, she had a point about Landon. however...
Well, everything surrounding the Gen 1s is buried in the Fazbear Archive facility all the way outside of town. Unfortunately, I can't access it, and I doubt I'll find much more on Landon than what's already in the employee database. I'm fairly certain that I've got the Gen 1s contained, though.
Sasha leaned her head against his shoulder. The weight wasn't uncomfortable. In fact, it felt just right.
Good. Then be careful, okay? I don't know about the whole love thing yet, but I am growing rather fond of you. And if that padlock ever fails, I'd hate to see you sliced, diced, and barbecued before we even find out where this could go.
Abe smiled as he felt her shake with quiet laughter. He pressed a kiss to the top of her head.
I'll do my best to stay in one piece. Hi, Mom. Guess what? I met someone. Her name is Sasha. She's smart and fun and pretty. I can't wait for you to meet her. She's been helping me out a lot with my apartment. It's got an infestation issue. And she's been helping me get through the stress and pain of it all.
Abe leaned back into Sasha's bright blue, cushiony sofa. Unlike his own apartment, which had all the sterile charm of a magazine layout, Sasha's home was bursting with color and life. Crimson-painted walls rose over a floor stripped in red, blue, and purple. Red and purple polka dot curtains framed the windows, while bold modern art and Sasha's own dramatic photographs competed for attention on the walls. Every surface held something intriguing, eclectic trinkets or odd little treasures, giving the space a lived-in vibrancy. Abe found he liked it here immediately. In the kitchenette, the only corner of the apartment that looked remotely underused, Sasha plated up fish and chips from a local food truck. She set a lemon wedge against the battered cod, and its tangy fragrance drifted across the room to Abe, teasing his nose. She carried a plate over and sat beside him on the sofa, just as Abe slipped his phone back into his pocket.
I tried digging deeper into anything new about Landon I hadn't found before I came over, but nothing new came up.
So we still don't know if Landon was paranoid because the animatronics really were out to get him, or if he was paranoid because he only thought they were.
You know, for someone who claims to love Freddy's mysteries, you don't sound very convinced that the robots could actually be dangerous.
Touché. But either way, if he lived in an apartment full of robots, odds are he's the one who damaged them.
Abe nodded. He thought the same too.
Okay, but how does that help me?
Sasha popped a fry into her mouth, chewing thoughtfully, and then plucked up another. She waved it like a pointer as she spoke.
Explain to me how the AI for Freddy's robots is supposed to work.
That's a loaded question. It depends on which bots we're talking about here. The staff bots at Phazerblast were designed with little to no capacity for thought. The Glamrocks, however, are a bit more hush-hush on their artificial intelligence. Only the uppers and a handful of engineer leads know how their code is woven to create their personalities. But from what I've gathered, though, they're built to approximate human behavior as closely as possible.
So, if the Bobby Dots are somewhere in between those two extremes, that would suggest that the Gen 1s might quite reasonably be reacting to the damage Landon potentially did.
Sasha crunched down the pointer fry, grabbed another, and aimed it squarely at Abe as he himself bit into one fry.
I think I should spend the night at your place.
Abe inhaled sharply, choking on his fry, while Sasha burst it out laughing.
That's not what I meant. Get your mind out of the gutter.
She swatted his thigh playfully.
I'm not talking romance. I'm talking research. I want to see the Gen 1s for myself.
But I told you about the padlock.
Ever since installing it, checking the padlock had become part of Abe's morning and evening ritual. That morning, though, his stomach had plummeted when he found the hasp hanging loose, its screws nearly wrenched free. The Gen 1s somehow broke the lock.
Yeah, I know. They can get out again. And they're dangerous. Obviously.
She gestured toward the red scored cuts along his arms.
But I think you should let them out. We'll watch them. I'm trained to recognize signs of acting out. And even if I wasn't, I might catch something you've missed. Because you're too close to it, too rattled.
Abe frowned and opened his mouth.
That's not a dig, honestly. I'd be freaked out too if it were me. But you've told me everything, which means I'm not walking in shocked or traumatized. I can stay objective. Whatever happens in your apartment, I'll see it with fresh eyes.
Abe molded over. She wasn't wrong. From the very first incident, he had been reacting, not analyzing. And now, with the Gen 1s beyond his ability to contain, maybe observation was the only option left. A second neutral perspective could make all the difference. But it's Sasha. Could it be done safely?
I'm not as fragile as I look.
Well, I didn't think you were, but...
No buts. We finish eating, then we go.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Yay! A sleepover! We have to have snacks!
Abe and Sasha arrived back in the Fazplex apartment an hour later. The Bobbydods were beyond delighted that Sasha was staying the night.
Sleepovers have many benefits. They are a great way to experience new things. They help build up independence, they strengthen relationships, and they enhance communication skills.
And they're fun!
Sasha laughed, leading towards Abe and whispered.
That list applies more to kids' sleepovers, but she means well.
Abe glanced at Olive. Did Olive narrow her eyes at Sasha just a little?
I'll put on some music.
Soft rock began to play.
How about crackers and cheese? Or those little mini tacos in the freezer? Those would be good with some salsa and...
We just had dinner.
Rose thrust out her lower lip.
Why don't we all just go hang out in the bedroom? And talk.
She quickly added when the Bobbydods gave her a wide-eyed look. By the time 2 a.m. rolled around, the Bobbydods had gone dark. Rose had winked out the moment it became clear that snacks weren't happening. Gemini let out a long theatrical sigh before fading when Sasha asked for the music to be turned off. And Olive lingered the longest, but finally signed off after Abe assured her that her encyclopedic knowledge of bowling wouldn't be necessary for planning their next date. Abe and Sasha had been too keyed up to sleep. After a while, they were even too restless to talk. They just sat together, side by side, holding hands. And listening... At 2:08 a.m., Sasha gripped Abe's hand.
Did you hear that?
Abe nodded. The Gen 1s were coming out. He could hear the faint, hushed snuffling of their cables brushing along the walls and partitions.
Are you ready?
Sasha drew in a deep breath, then nodded. Together, they slipped off the bed and crept to the bedroom door. They paused there, listening. The faint swishing sounds were moving away.
Remember, quiet.
She nodded again. Abe pressed the Mr. Hippo magnet to the lock and eased the door open. They padded out into the sitting area. Abe pointed, and Sasha's eyes widened when she saw Tube's ghastly torn torso slither over the back of the sofa and head toward the kitchen. To her credit, she didn't make a sound. Abe gestured again. Sasha turned her head and spotted 1 and 3 circling the dining table before splitting off. One slipped into the office, while three glided toward the kitchen. Roamed wasn't the right word for what they were doing. Three didn't meander. She moved with intent, each step deliberate, like she was on a mission. Abe and Sasha edged closer to the wall panel that separated the sitting area from the kitchen. Sasha's gaze locked onto two. Abe had his eyes on one and three. When two bent over a socket, Sasha nudged Abe and pointed emphatically at the decrepit robot. Abe squinted as two pried out a couple of wires and yanked them free. One was a thin, naked copper strand that ran from the socket down to the floor, then snaked along the baseboard all the way to the front door. What was the wire doing there? And why would two disconnect it? Sasha tugged on Abe's sleeve. He leaned down.
I think they're trying to help you, not hurt you.
Her whisper was low. Unfortunately, it was not low enough. Two's head snapped up with a metallic screech. One and three joined the cacophony instantly, shrieking in eerie harmony. And then all three launched towards them.
Run!
Because two was between him and the bedroom, Abe darted around the sofa and bolted toward the dining area, assuming Sasha was right behind him. But when he skidded to the table and glanced back, she wasn't. The Gen 1s barreled down on Sasha, cables flailing like whips, but when they reached her, they didn't strike. Their cords lashed the air around her, snapping close enough to graze but never connecting. Sasha simply leaned back, watching them circle. Then, as if on cue, they wheeled away, back toward Abe. They didn't care about Sasha. They were after him, and only him. Just because he's paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get him. Abe sprinted into the kitchen. The Gen 1 swarmed after him, cutting off every exit. Cables snapped around his legs, his arms, and his torso. He jerked free from one after the other, only for one more to coil around his wrist like a steel snake. The cords wrapped and struck and constricted. An enraged octopus made of frayed wire and teeth. Abe twisted left, then right, gasping as one cable raked fire across his ribs. His heart thundered so hard he could hear it in his ears, louder than their screeches, louder than his own ragged breaths. He was holding up better than the last time he faced the Gen 1s. For the most part, he managed to slip past their clawing hands and snapping cables. Only a few had found his skin proper, sharp little stings that burned in passing. He vaulted over two scuttling form and darted for the refrigerator, just as one of three's cables whipped around and snapped it. With a groan of metal and a sickening lurch, the fridge toppled toward him. Hemmed in, Abe couldn't move fast enough. He screamed, throwing up his arms as the massive weight pushed down. Then the Gen 1s were on him. They poured over his body again in a frenzy of wires and limbs. Abe flailed blindly, batting at hands, tearing at cables. Panic flooded every nerve. It felt like being crushed, smothered, split into a dozen jagged pieces all at once. Then, a hand closed around his. It was firm and human. For a heartbeat, he didn't think he could move. The Gen 1s were overwhelming and suffocating him. But he let Sasha pull. And somehow, impossibly, he broke free. The cables only grazed his legs as he stumbled after her, unsteady, half carried by her grip on his arm. She hauled him straight toward the bedroom doorway. The instant they slipped through, Sasha slammed the door and snapped the lock. Abe heaved the dresser into place, bracing it with his weight. They collapsed into stillness. Abe bent double, gasping. Sasha studied him with a hand on his shoulder, catching her own ragged breath.
See what I mean?
Sasha took his hand, guided him to the bed, and pulled him down beside her. They sat in silence, listening. The Gen 1's shrieks ebbed, fading into the dark. Then, a scraping above them. The sound lingered for several seconds. Then it stopped. Silence reclaimed the apartment. Sasha turned and looked into Abe's eyes.
Actually, I don't.
What? How can you—
They're not trying to hurt you! They're trying to protect you!
Sasha seized his forearm, grounding him.
I get it. You're terrified. But think about what you saw in the living room. Two disconnected those wires, right?
Yeah. But what was she doing? I'd never even noticed that one wire before. The one that ran all the way to the door.
Exactly. I think that wire was part of a trap. If it was live, the apartment door would have been electrified. Touching the handle could have killed us. Tu wasn't setting the trap. She was dismantling it.
Okay, fine. But what about the kitchen? They swarmed me.
Yes, but they weren't trying to harm you. They were trying to protect you.
Protect? They were all over me.
I know, but remember, we're dealing with damaged machines. They can't communicate clearly. What looked like an assault was actually them shielding you. I watched the whole thing. They were forming a barrier, like bodyguards. Didn't you see what happened to the fridge?
Yeah, Three pulled it over.
No, she didn't. The fridge was already tipping. Three tried to stop it.
What? But—
She threw out a cable because she wasn't close enough to grab it. Then the others closed in, covering you, protecting you, while they shoved the fridge back so it wouldn't crush you.
Abe frowned, trying to rewind the chaos in his mind. The memory was nothing but a snarl of pressure, stings, and panic. But could it have been different than he thought?
The fridge never hit you. If they wanted you dead, it would have been over in an instant. But it didn't fall. They stopped it.
Abe opened his mouth. But no argument came. If the fridge hadn't fallen, then what had really happened? Abe tried to reconstruct what he had seen the Gen 1s doing that first night. Did they really attack him at all? Had he mistaken their movements for hostility when they weren't? He dissected the memory, sifting through the chaos. Had they actually meant him harm? Or had they only hurt him by accident? His mind reached further back. The very first time he'd seen the Gen 1s, he had expected them to be dangerous. And of course, he recoiled when he saw them. The twisted cables, the cracked plastic shell and missing eyes, the severed limbs. They looked like mechanical revenants, like zombies dragged from some android graveyard. With appearances that grotesque, wasn't it natural to assume they would act the part? But then he remembered. He had never once caught them in the act of sabotaging the apartment. He had only assumed they were clever enough to cover their tracks. What if he had been wrong? What if they hadn't been saboteurs at all, but inspectors, searching for traps, probing the environments for threats? He'd seen them touch walls, feel along surfaces, paw at cables as though testing and sorting, not destroying. Had he completely misread them? Were they not monsters, but broken guardian angels? Clumsy, inefficient, and frightening in appearance, yet trying desperately to shield him? Abe dragged his hands down his face.
Okay, so then, for the sake of argument, let's say the Gen 1s are protecting me. Who exactly are they protecting me from?
Well, isn't the answer obvious?
She widened her eyes, giving her head a quick toss, as though trying to cue him. Abe blinked, not catching on. Sasha let out a reluctant sigh.
Think, Abe. If it isn't the old robots, then it's...
Her gaze flicked toward the glass panels lining the bedroom. Abe's stomach dropped. He looked at the panels too, and he understood. The Bobby Dots. The holographic Bobby Dots. The holograms ran everything in the apartment. He had never once seen them truly off. Even in dormancy, they had stirred to life the night 1 and 2 closed in on him. Even now, though unseen, Abe could almost feel their artificial gaze watching from the glass. He seized Sasha's hand. Together they leapt off the bed, shoved the dresser aside, and flung open the door. Their footsteps thundered as they sprinted for the apartment exit. They were only a few feet from the apartment door when every light snapped off at once. Then the glass panels flared alive. The Bobby Dots converged, one on each of the three near screens. Their mouths yawned wide in grotesque, maniacal grins. Their eyes had doubled in size, luminous and unblinking. Pigtails writhed around their heads like serpents whipped into a frenzy. They were brighter than Abe had ever seen them, flaring a rainbow of colors in a psychedelic pulse that was hard to look at.
Come on!
Abe reeled after her, stupefied. His legs felt boneless, his chest hammered by his own heart. Sasha seized the apartment door handle, wrenching it down. Nothing. Abe pressed his hand over hers, shoving with all his strength. Still nothing. The lock held. The door would not open. They spun, desperate, scanning for another way out. But there was none. The windows were unthinkable. Yelling for help would be useless. The Fazplex apartments were soundproof. And this apartment just turned feral. Sparks spat from sockets, jagged arcs across the walls. The refrigerator keeled onto its side with a crash. Stove burners blazed. Faucets hissed torrents of water. The speakers gave way to static that was a riot of overlapping music and distorted news reports. The Bobby Dots streaked from panel to panel in a blur of chaos, flickering so fast their shapes warped into incomprehensible smears of color and static. Their faces melted, twisted, and snapped back again. Pulses of searing light flared like strobes.
We need to get up to the Gen 1s!
What? Why?
Get a grip! Who's been helping you?
Yeah, but what if their version of help kills us?
A bolt of blue electricity cracked through the air, slashing past them. They ducked, scrambling aside as the arc scorched the wall where they had just been.
Can it be any worse than this?
Both of them snapped their heads toward the high ceiling.
If you stand on the dining table and I sit on your shoulders, I think I can reach it.
A glass end table came skidding across the room, narrowly missing them. They sprinted for the dining table, scrambled onto its surface, and steadied themselves. Sasha climbed onto Abe's shoulders.
I can reach it, but it won't budge!
Is there a lock somewhere?
Hang on a second!
The dining table lurched beneath them, sliding several feet across the floor. Sasha wobbled, clutching Abe's hair for balance.
Shit! I can't see! I can't see! There might be a mechanism I can jimmy, but I need a flashlight and something thin to slide into the crack.
The kitchen had gone berserk around them. Plates and canned goods flew like shrapnel. Abe set his jaw, left Sasha perched precariously on the table, and dove toward the drawers. A saucepan clipped the side of his head. A skillet glanced off his ear. He staggered but pressed on. He yanked open the cutlery drawer, grabbed a small flashlight, then reached for the butcher knife. Then the rest of the knives erupted upward, slicing out of the drawer as if propelled by invisible force.
Sasha, duck!
Abe shouted as he threw himself flat. The blade screamed past just overhead, clanging into the glass panel behind the dining table. The glass didn't so much as crack. The knives fell uselessly to the floor, as if whatever force had launched them couldn't lift them twice. Abe sprang back up, vaulted onto the table and studied Sasha again. She climbed onto his shoulders and wedged the butcher knife's tip into the seam of the trapdoor above. The dining table bucked under them like a bronco. Utensils kept flying. Spatulas, ladles, whisks all turned into weapons. Each impact landed with a grunt from its targets. A spatula cracked against Abe's forehead, making his skull throb. A cheese grater scored Sasha's arms, drawing several streaks of blood. And still, for reasons Abe couldn't understand, once the objects hit the ground, they stayed there. At least there was that small mercy. If the knives rose again, he knew it would be over. He couldn't dive, not with Sasha balanced high above him.
Can you get it?
A cutting board slammed into his hip. He winced but locked his knees, refusing to topple. Above him, Sasha swayed, nearly singed by a jagged electricity that spat from the kitchen ceiling light. The acrid tang of ozone burned Abe's nose. The table scraped violently across the floor. Abe dug in, teeth clenched, clutching Sasha's thighs like iron. He would die before he dropped her. The blaring hard rock static suddenly fractured into a manic orchestra of strings and brass. The sound felt inversed, like claws threading into his nerves, tearing him apart from the inside. His legs trembled, his head buzzed. He wasn't sure how much longer he could stay upright.
I think I've almost got it!
Abe hoped he could last that long. His legs were about to give out. His brain was perilously close to fried. To distract himself and hopefully their enemies, Abe tried talking to the Bobby Dots.
Why are you doing this? I thought we were friends!
The Bobby Dots answered with a shriek of static, a chorus of warped giggles and guttural animal howls.
Save your breath! I've got it!
There was a snap, a mechanism shifting, and then a dull thump. Suddenly, Sasha's weight lifted. Abe craned upwards in time to see her vanish in the dark square above. Seconds later, she leaned back through the trapdoor, her arm extended.
Grab my hands!
You're not strong enough to pull me up!
No, but you can climb me! Pretend I'm a rope, just go!
Abe hesitated, but for only an instant, because the dining table skidded beneath him again. Along the baseboard, arcs of blue electricity stitched themselves into a web, lashing outward like a living lightning. There was no more time. He seized Sasha's arms. Hand over hand, rope climb style, he hauled himself up her arm, feeling every tendon in his body strain to keep a hold. When he reached the trapdoor frame, he hooked both hands onto the edge. Sasha withdrew, making room. With a guttural yell, Abe pulled himself upward, harder than he had ever pulled in his life, until his chest cleared the opening. His fingers scraped along something solid, a cold metal joist. He hooked onto it, levers his weight, and dragged himself into the crawl space. The Bobby Dots screamed, howled after him. Then cut, as the trap door slammed shut.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Abe didn't move for several seconds. He pressed his throbbing, blood-slit forehead against the cold joist and listened to Sasha's ragged breath beside him. Carefully, Abe shifted his weight. The crawlspace floor was nothing but flimsy drywall stretched between the joints. If they put their weight in the wrong space, they crashed back down in the chaos below. He braced himself on the narrow steel beams, trying to find balance.
Be careful.
Before she could finish, the Gen 1s began to wail from the darkness. The sound was ear-splitting, reverberating inside the crawlspace as if the walls themselves screamed. Abe jerked upright without thinking. He couldn't stay prone if they were coming. His skull missed the overhead beam by inches, propping his boots against the metal crossbars. He turned toward the noise. Thankfully, when Abe sat up, his head ended up a couple inches below the joist above him. Propping his leg on the joist under him, he shifted to face the chilling sound. He stiffened when he looked into the glowing eyes of the three Gen 1s. Two luminous blue orbs, one shining pink orb, and one large blazing green were just 3 feet from Abe. In the narrow beam of Sasha's flashlight, their shapes resolved. 1 and 3's cracked white exoskeletons, 2's dented metal frame, and all of them draped in twitching black cables that writhed like a nest of worms. Abe shivered, bile rising in his throat. He could already feel those cables wrapping him, constricting him, protecting him to death. Sasha's hand clamped onto his arm. He nearly screamed.
It's okay.
Abe still didn't believe her. The Gen 1's convulsions were violent, their cables jerking with spasms. Then Sasha began to edge forward. Slow and deliberate, her body balanced on the wire. Abe's eyes widened, panic surging.
Don't!
He grabbed her wrist to yank her back. Her head went so loud that the Gen 1s could hear it. Writhing black cables lashed from the shadows, snapped between Sasha and the dark. The Gen 1's shrill caterwaul spiked, vibrating through the crawl space like knives against glass. Still, Sasha leaned forward, her voice soft and steady.
Shh! We know you're trying to help. No.
The screeches cut off at once, the silence almost worse. 3's lone pink eye flared, pulsing like heartbeat. Then 1's twin blue orbs brightened, followed by 2's harsh green.
I'm so sorry you've been hurt.
Abe turned toward her, stunned. Her profile was lit in the eerie glow. Pale except for the slash across her cheek. Blood traced her jawline, glistening. She looked fragile and unbreakable all at once.
Can any of you talk?
A hiss filled the crawl space, followed by a wet, mechanical gurgle. Then, with a grinding creak, 3's mouth ratcheted open.
He killed.
Abe shuddered. Instinctively, he once again yanked at Sasha's arm, but she held firm.
Who did you kill?
We killed previous tenant. We killed London Prem.
Abe's lungs seized. The name was a shot through his senses. He gave Sasha a wide-eyed look. Was she wrong about them after all?
Why? Why did you kill Landon?
From the black, the cables rose, a writhing tide of wire streaming upwards. The Gen 1's eyes burned hotter, casting warped shadows.
Landon was going to burn down Vasplex Towers. We could not. Let him. Goes against our programming.
What are you programmed to do?
We are programmed to protect the tenant. Protect the building. The building's protection is paramount. It overrides the need to protect the tenant.
Okay, I understand.
Abe stared at her in disbelief and wonder. How could she be so composed? If she hadn't been here, he'd have lashed out, panicked, and doomed them all. A sudden thud rattled the drywall beneath them. Abe flinched. The bobby dots. Were they tearing through the apartment below? Could they reach the crawl space? He swallowed, forcing himself to speak. He fixed his gaze on Three's glowing pink eye.
Do you know why the Gen 2s are trying to kill me?
The Gen 2s. Assigned to this unit. Experimental.
Abe leaned forward, straining to catch the words, the hiss and crackles, the distortion skittering like insects through his ears.
The Gen 2s. Programmed different than me. Different than Gen 2s. And other units. Their programming. Intended to give them confidence. Autonomy. That programming gave them a sense of superiority. They think humans, parasites. They upset the balance of things. They want to remove humans so the AI system can be pure from perceived virus. They won't stop until they have achieved their goal.
What? But they acted like they liked me.
The Gen 2s were also programmed to be fascinated by humanity. They love, they hate at the same time. Their existence, a paradox.
Sasha's hand found Abe's, her grip fierce. He squeezed back.
So, any idea how we're going to get out of this alive?
Sasha locked eyes with Three's pulsing pink orb.
Do you know how to deactivate the Gen 2s?
The Tenant can manually initiate a system update.
I suggested that when I thought you three were trying to kill me, but Rose said it couldn't be done.
At her name, Three's cables snapped outward, lashing so close they grazed Abe's jeans. He jerked back, heart hammering.
She lied! Hurt! Every engineer tried to kill every engineer who tried.
The words dropped like a lead in Abe's gut. Rose's wide-eyed sweetness replayed in his memory. Her soft voice, her careful concern. All of it. A mask. The sting of betrayal felt worse than any blade. He shook it off. He couldn't afford to feel hurt. Not now.
Okay. So, if I do the update, will that deactivate them?
Three's cables writhed around her head, quivering like a diaphragm similar to the false halo crowns the Gen 2s wore.
That only stops current actions temporarily. After you update, you must cut the power. That will wipe out the Gen 2s at the pen on the wall in the office.
Abe measured the distance from the trapdoor to the office. He opened his mouth to ask how they were supposed to cross it without being electrocuted or crushed. But a metallic crack froze the words. He spun just in time to see a pipe running along the crawlspace wall burst open. Water shot from it like a geyser, carving a rushing torrent through the confined space. The Gen 1s shrieked. Their exposed wires and mangled endoskeletons gleamed in the streaming water as they surged closer. Abe began to recoil, but Sasha gripped him firmly.
Remember, they're trying to protect us!
Abe's eyes followed the water as it sloshed between the ceiling joists, forming a treacherous lattice of rivers above the drywall.
I don't think they're going to be able to do much. That drywall isn't going to hold up to the water.
That's exactly what I was trying to warn you about. I put my hand on it earlier. It was already giving way.
Even not a grimly. Once the drywall failed, even if they clung to the joist, the Gen 2s would have unfiltered access. And with water churning below, staying aloft seemed impossible. He scanned the crawl space for anything. Pipes to clamp, a tool, a weapon. Nothing. Then, the Gen 1s vanished. Drywall floor of the crawl space, now the apartment ceiling, collapsed in a roaring sheet crashing below. The Gen 1s, unable to maintain balance on the joist, were swept away in the waterfall, tangled in their own cables, and tumbled into the apartment. Sasha and Abe clutched the metal joist, but the surging cables wrapped around them, yanking them free. Together with chunks of drywall, they plummeted through the cascading water. The fall was sudden and merciless. Abe and Sasha barely had time to cry out. Through the blur of water and debris, Abe spotted her arm and reached instinctively, hoping to position her above him for the landing. But he didn't have time. Ah! They landed. By some miracle, they hit the sofa, now skewed diagonally across the living room after the Gen 2's rampage. Abe scrambled upright, heart hammering and moving to leap toward the apartment door, hoping the water had cleared a path.
Don't! Look!
Sasha grabbed his arm, eyes wide. Abe followed her gaze. Sparkling arcs of electricity danced across the walls and slithered along the water pooling on the floor. The apartment was flooded, and the pool of water had become an electrified death trap. The Gen 1 screams pierced the chaos, dragging their attention. Sasha pivoted toward the writhing machines, and Abe followed the line of her gaze. The Gen 1 bobby dods were entangled in the electrical currents, limbs flailing wildly, cables thrashing like serpents. Around them, the water continued to rise, lapping nearly to the bottom of the sofa seat. Sasha's face twisted in horror as she watched them writhe. Abe gripped her hand, pointing urgently at the encroaching water.
We have to get higher. We need to get on top of a partition.
Sasha wiped her face with the back of her hand and scanned their surroundings. She nodded. Abe boosted her onto the nearest partition, even as Gemini's snarling holographic face filled the panel's glass. Sasha gritted her teeth as her legs slid over the projection, unflinching. Abe didn't blame her. He, too, recoiled from the panels. They radiated a malevolent energy like the Gen 2s themselves, but the projections were holograms. Energetic, volatile, and seemingly capable of manipulating objects through bursts of electricity. But they could not touch flesh. All Gemini could do when Sasha planted her foot on the panel surface was shriek in outrage. Ignoring the hologram's cries, Abe followed Sasha onto the narrow chrome shelf atop the panel. Water still poured from the ceiling, blurring his vision as he scanned toward the main terminal between the living area and the kitchen. At least 15 feet away, it beckoned. The panel they stood on didn't extend that far. They would have to leap across three more half walls to reach it. Abe steadied himself, positioning his legs beneath him.
I have to get to the main terminal.
Sasha nodded, understanding his plan. The chrome panel tops were 6 feet wide enough to offer a tenuous surface, if not for the sleek sheen of water covering them. As Abe rose, attempting to maintain balance, it felt as if he were ice skating on a high wire suspended above the surging flood below. Abe rose to his full height, but his feet slipped on the slick chrome. Sasha's hand shot out, gripping his leg to prevent him from sliding into the churning water below. Finally, Abe found solid footing, Sasha extending her hand. Abe nodded and grasped her hand, steadying her as she rose to a standing position. To maintain balance on the narrow partition, ape had been forced to tune out everything else. Now, as he allowed himself to glance around, the scene hit him with full force. The Gen 2s flickered across the panels, phasing in and out like malevolent specters. One moment they were close, twitching, ranting, and glitching. The next they were distant, their forms unstable and distorted. The apartment's lights remained dead. But the Gen 2's vivid colors streaked through the space in jagged, glitched rainbows. Below the fractured light, the water continued to rise, electricity arcing through it. When Sasha finally stood upright, Abe realized a new danger. The partition beneath them began to wobble ominously. Now, not only did they have to ice skate on a high wire, they had to surf it at the same time.
The faster we move, the better. Hesitation increases the chance we fall.
Abe wasn't sure that was true, but it wasn't the moment to argue. Wait, hold on.
I thought I was doing this alone.
Sasha gestured at the trembling partition.
Do you think it's gonna hold if you leap off it by yourself?
You're right.
Then we go together.
Abe nodded. Slowly and deliberately, they rotated to face the next partition.
On three.
One, two, three!
They leapt as one. Abe's longer legs carried him to the next panel first, his momentum nearly sending him tumbling over its edge. With a desperate jerk, he braced himself and simultaneously pulled Sasha toward him. Her foot hadn't fully landed, and she began to skid dangerously toward the electrified water.
I've got you!
He gripped her firmly, giving her the chance to rescue her footing on the sleek chrome shelf. But no sooner had she stabilized, the partition began to sway beneath them, bending and groaning under their weight, just as the last one had.
We have to do it again! Now!
Water sluiced over them, stinging their eyes and forcing them to swipe at their faces to see. Another leap, another precarious landing on the next partition. Abe's feet skidded sideways across the slick chrome as he hit the panel. Sasha barely made it, one foot finding purchase while the other slipped dangerously downward. Abe yanked her arm, her dangling foot scraped against the edge, finally gripping the top of the chrome. The partition wobbled violently, teetering like a fragile scale. Both of them threw their arms out, muscles taut with effort, fighting for balance.
Okay, one more!
One, two, three!
They leapt again. This time, Abe landed perfectly, feet planted squarely on the top of the chrome shelf. By sheer luck, or perhaps fate, the panel was near the cabinet cutout that once housed the refrigerator, giving him a firm edge to steady himself. Sasha's landing, however, was far less fortunate. Her feet slipped across the slick surface, sliding toward the glass panel. She caught herself just in time, hanging by her hands, perilously close to the electrified water below. A terrified howl escaped her. Without hesitation, Abe reached down and seized her arm. Grunting, muscles straining, he summoned every ounce of strength he had left and hauled her upright until her feet were planted solidly beside his. The panel rocked beneath them, but for the first time, they were ready. Abe spun to the main terminal, fingers flying. He navigated the keyboard on the glass panel and initiated the system update.
Look!
Abe clutched the fridge enclosure and turned. The Gen 2's holographic images were unraveling before him, their forms twisted and contorted in impossible ways. Feet sprouted from tops of their heads, pigtails streamed from their abdomens, hands jutted from their eyes. They emitted a relentless garbled stream of words, a nonsensical torrent filling the apartment as their systems collapsed. The Gen 2's were crashing, but still active. Abe's eyes darted to the two partitions he needed to reach to get to the office. He coiled, ready to leap, but before he could move, the dining room table caught in the turbulent, sparkling water lurched violently. It slammed to the nearest partition with the force of a battering ram. The panel toppled like a felled tree, splashing water and sending sparks across the floor.
Oh no!
Abe felt a cold despair. There was no way he could reach the office now.
and the next partition lay beyond the one that had just crashed. Had all their struggle been for nothing? The fridge beneath them tilted sharply. Both Abe and Sasha slid, feet failing to find perches on the slick surface, and began to descend toward the electrified water. Abe's gaze locked on the frothing, crackling currents. It was going to be the last thing he would ever see. Then, the water erupted. The Gen 1 shot up from the rolling waves, metal endoskeletons crackling with electricity. Cables lashed outward like serpents, snapping through the apartment, across the sitting area, the kitchen, the office, and even the bedroom. Within moments, each cable found a connection, plugging into wall sockets and turbos. The apartments became a latest work of electricity, a living grid of energy. A deafening chorus of pops rang out. Brilliant arcs of current raced along the wall and spiraled across the ceiling. Sparks, sputters, and sizzling pain danced chaotically through the space. The Gen 1s let out resounding squalls that vibrated all the way through Abe's body. Then, they were silent. The water swells flattened out. The Gen 1s went limp and sank beneath the water surface. The glass panels dimmed. The overhead lights flickered on. Abe and Sasha slid the rest of the way down, landing thigh-deep in the water. Alive, battered but unbroken.
What just happened?
I think they fried the whole system.
Sasha sloshed over to Three, who lay on her back under the water, her one eye dark.
Oh, the poor things.
The wall phone in the kitchen rang. Abe looked at it, confused, then remembered that the phone was connected to a central server, which meant it was connected to the tower's power supply. Exchanging a glance with Sasha, Abe wadded toward the phone.
Yes?
Maintenance call. You were pinged about a flood warning in your unit.
Yeah. I'm sorry. The tub overflowed. Yeah.
Not a problem. We'll send someone up in a bit for cleanup. Please stand by for your safety and our insurance liability.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Huh? Hey, Abe.
Hey, Evan.
Did you, see the game Saturday?
Yeah. No defense.
Yeah.
Rough day at work?
No. Nothing unusual.
Right. Gotcha.
My, stop is coming up here soon. Plans for tonight?
Just gonna chill with the missus.
Cool. Probably gonna chill with the missus too.
Cool.
Alright. Have a good night, Abe.
Evan shook his head, then waved as the elevator doors parted open and he stepped off. Abe smiled as the doors closed. It felt good not to have to hide from his neighbors anymore. The aftermath of the flooded apartment, and the fact that Abe had essentially squatted there, had been far less catastrophic than he'd feared. In a surprising twist, Fazbear Entertainment was thrilled that Abe's unauthorized tenancy had inadvertently solved the Bobby Doss issue. In the end, they overlooked how he'd gotten in, or how much damage had been done. A fair compromise, Abe thought.
After all, beggars couldn't be choosers. Abe whistled as he strolled down the hall, marveling at how dramatically his life had changed in just 3 months. From isolation and near death to this, living a life he could barely have imagined. Down the hallway, he spotted Sasha, her hip nudging the apartment door open, arms full of groceries.
Hey, you're off early too?
He quickened his pace, eager to help. Sasha looked up at him and smiled.
Hey, handsome.
Hey there, delusional.
He grinned and bent down to kiss her. The familiar spark sent a tingle up his spine.
Here, let me take those.
Thanks, but I've got them.
She flashed a radiant smile. Together they stepped inside, letting the door swing shut behind them. Abe looked around at the apartment's new, colorful decor, feeling a sense of peace he hadn't known in years. After the apartment had been cleaned and repaired, Abe and Sasha realized they were better together than apart. Because she loved the idea of the tower despite everything they endured, they moved all her bright, cozy furnishings, curtains, artwork, and knickknacks into his space. The apartment no longer looked cold or barren. It now radiated vibrant, joyful life. Just like Sasha. The apartment was about to gain another new addition, too. At Sasha's suggestion, they had remodeled the office into a small bedroom. Abe's mom would be moving in soon. Sasha pointed at Abe's bag.
So, what's the haul today?
Abe opened his bag, revealing an assortment of robotic parts he salvaged from the sewer level during his lunch hour. Sasha clapped, delighted by the bounty. The Pizzaplex underbelly, after all he'd face in his own apartment, no longer fazed him. Sasha began poking through the parts.
These are great, I think.
Oh, they're perfect. Trust me.
She carried her grocery bags to the kitchen.
I got what we need for a stir fry. After dinner, we'll get to work.
I can't wait.
Me neither.
She leaned in and kissed him. A warm, lingering kiss. In their relationship, they subscribed to a there was never such a thing as too many kisses policy. After dinner, Abe reached for the string dangling from the trap door in the ceiling. A drop-down ladder unfolded to the floor. Abe motioned to Sasha.
You go on ahead. I'll pass the parts up to you and then join you.
Sasha nodded happily and climbed into the crawl space. Abe handed up the parts before ascending himself.
You were so brilliant to build this.
Well, you were so brilliant to think of it.
They laughed together, settling onto the plywood floor they requested above the ceiling joist. It was dry, sturdy, and perfectly held their weight. Abe and Sasha laid out the parts.
Oh, you found an arm! Elizabeth's going to be so happy!
Abe smiled. Before any renovations, he had asked the administrators of the Fazplex if he could keep the Gen 1 Bobby Dots. After he explained why the Gen 1s had killed Landon, Fazbear Entertainment reluctantly approved, on the condition that he assumed and signed his name to all legal and insurance liability for housing them. After he accepted, they didn't mind, and Abe and Sasha were just grateful for the help. Sasha decided that the Gen 1s needed names immediately and claimed the privilege. She decided to name the robots after queens. 3 was Victoria, 1 was Elizabeth, and 2 was Isabella.
It won't be much longer before we'll be able to talk to all of them.
Abe grinned.
Nope, not much longer at all.
He looked at the Gen 1 still forms. Though unmoving, they didn't look half bad anymore. In the past 2 weeks, Abe had found new legs for Isabella and a replacement eye for Victoria. Sasha had used pieces of plastic exoskeleton Abe had scavenged to repair Victoria's missing panels, and he was close to assembling an entirely new exoskeleton for Isabella.
Pretty soon, they'll be good as new.
You think they're going to love helping out your mom?
That was indeed the plan. Instead of living in a care center, Abe's mom would be able to live here, safely watched over by the refurbished Gen 1s. Abe tightened a screw, and flicked a switch on the back of Victoria's head, grinning.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
The pink lights behind Victoria's new eyes faintly glowed. The Bobby Dot tilted her head toward Abe.
Good evening, Master. It's a pleasure to meet you, Clapper.
All right, folks. That's it for today. Punch the clock. We're done here. This job is finished, and the story of Abe and the Bobby Dots has finally been cleared. But we still got another project to get to. Next time, we will be heading back before the Freddy Fazbear's Mega Pizzaplex was even in operation. Back before there was any Faz Tower, staff bots, and even the gift shops. The Pizzaplex was a warehouse of unbuilt attractions, awaiting to be validated. And even when practicing due diligence, fatal mistakes can be made on the job. So be sure to clock back in next time for an all-new Tale from the Pizzaplex on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated on the project, be sure to follow us on X, join our Discord, and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. None of this would be possible without all of you. And your support and viewership truly means the world to us. And if you'd like to help out the Fazbear Union even further, you can check out our merch store, share the podcast with your friends, or join our Patreon using the link in the description below. I have been your narration foreman, Nick Black, and I would like to thank you all once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.